Joining me this afternoon is Texas singer-songwriter Jack Ingram. Thank you so much for speaking with me for the first time here on Notably Texan today, Jack.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're going to be performing this Saturday night at Rally Round Greenville at 10. That is a free show everyone should be aware of, and certainly exciting news to find out that Texas' own Jack Ingram is going to be playing right here in our own neck of the woods. Jack, I always like to start off when I talk to performers like you with finding a little bit about your origins. Tell me a little bit about your beginnings in Texas. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Houston, and we moved out to the Woodlands when I was about 8, back when it was still the woods.
Oh, right.
There was probably like 5,000 people when I moved there. Now there's like 150,000, I think.
It's amazing how these places change in a hurry.
Yeah, so it was a great place to grow up, though. And then I went to Dallas, and that's when I started playing music, actually.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to ask you, when you were still a youngin', was music a big part of your childhood?
Well, being a fan was. I was a big fan of music. And I remember distinctly listening to my mom and dad's records with the headphones on and falling asleep that way. You know, I remember waking up to the
yeah
of the needle that was dragging across the last part of the record. And so I was a big fan. I think I knew fairly early on, nobody in my family really played music, but I think I knew fairly early that music certainly did something to my brain that seemed a little bit different than my friends.
I assumed that it certainly had to have done something to your brain early on that stuck with you through all these years.
it hit me pretty good. And so I attempted to learn, you know, I played a little piano and stuff when I was a kid, but started to try and learn guitar when I was, I guess, a senior in high school. And then that carried over into my first year of college when I really dug in, you know, instead of going to classes and doing my homework, I was sitting around learning songs. And so that's kind of how that started.
Right, so it was when you were going to college, I believe, that you really decided this was when you were going to college in Dallas, if I'm not mistaken, that's when you really decided to go ahead and try this whole music thing out. I think you went to like an open mic for one of your first gigs.
That's right. Yeah, there was an open mic on Tuesday nights. It was run by a guy named Kerry Pierce from a band called Jacko Pierce that was big in at the time.
Yeah,
and they still do well. They quit for a while and then they got back into it. But
right,
Kerry used to run that, and so I'd go up there and I'd play a couple songs. And the first couple times I did it, I realized like, all right, this is it. It's like, because I played athletics a little bit in high school, and coming into college, I just missed that adrenaline or whatever that was. You know, that thing of having to make it happen right now. And music, making music, fulfilled something that I'd never had before. You know, the creation of it, but playing music live really gave me that rush that I've been missing, you know, a kind of a purpose.
That's what hits a lot of you performers who love that thrill of getting up there on the stage in front of all these screaming fans.
Yeah, well, even then, though, I wasn't screaming fans.
Fair enough.
You know, some old other dude with a guitar who was just waiting for me to end.
Right.
You know, but still, for me, it was just an outlet. It was like, oh, okay, I have to do good, and I have to do good right now. That's, you know, you don't get that in many parts of your life. You know, I got in athletics as, you know, growing up, but I missed it, and I found it again through performing. And so, you know, the screaming chicks comes later.
Right.
Hey, Jack, I got a question for you.
Which is equally as fun.
how do you turn something like that, you know, that passion for getting up on the stage, how do you turn that into a career? What's the secret?
Well, for me, the secret was that I really loved making music. I loved writing it and learning it. And I think the secret for me was, first of all, doing it a lot, you know, a lot. So once I had a gig, I got another gig and another gig and another gig. And so there's got to be that passion for doing it, for getting gigs and going and showing up and doing that, which can be tedious if you're not really passionate about it.
Sure. That sounds like a roadmap for young people who want to do it, though.
Yes. It's first and foremost, it has to be a work ethic of getting the gear, getting the gigs, going to the shows, loading the gear, playing gigs under terrible circumstances where everybody's talking and nobody gives a rip what you're doing, and doing that for years and years. but the other part that actually probably is the real thing that I wish more artists would care about is being unique, writing songs that are personal and writing a bunch of them and not trying to copy whoever you like, not trying to copy Garth Brooks, J. Jason Aldean or Willie Nelson or Guy Clark.
Right. Sure.
It's about really trying to find out who you are, like why you're having something to say. You're not just putting rhymes together. You're weaving a story of some sort.
Sure.
You know, and that story has to be unique, or else I don't want to hear it.
Well, when you say it's unique, tell me this. I've been curious for, gosh, more than a decade. How much of real life is really influencing this? I know that real life experiences are going to have an effect on you and you're going to want to write about them. But, I mean, how true to real life are some of your songs and the stories that you're trying to tell?
Well, for me, I think they're as real is. You know, I mean, for me, most of my songs that I've written start and end with the truth as I see it. That might not be the truth as far as what reality is, but, you know, just like there's two sides to every story. So all of the good ones and most of the songs I've written, they're not literally play-by-play of what happened in a conversation or at an event or whatever, but they are very much the truth of how I feel about what's going on.
We're big about sharing the art of songwriting here in Northeast Texas. That's one of the great things about one of the undertakings that we do here at KETR. And that's just one of the secrets of songwriting, I think, that doesn't get shared enough. And that is turning the way that you see, the way that you perceive scenarios and situations, and turning that into something meaningful in song. And, Jack, I think you made a career out of it.
Well, I hope I've done something with it. You know, I mean, that's all I got.
It's the only trick you learned, right?
Seriously, man, that's all I can do. Is pick up a guitar and bitch about my problems.
Sure.
But that's, you know, but you can tell when somebody's, I you know, beginning of my career, I tried to make stuff up and be a writer. You know, I always loved Robert Earl Keane and guys like that. Right. And they seem to be able to also write fictional stories, you know, like James McMurtry and just people that I really dig. And I that's just not my, I can't do it.
We're talking with Jack Ingram this afternoon on 88.9 KETR. This is Notably Texan. I am Matt Minke, joined in studio by Jared Knight. And just a reminder that Jack is going to be performing on Saturday night at Rally Round Greenville at 10 o'clock. He is the headliner, and that's a free show open to the public. Now, Jack, you have released, since doing all that open mic night and realizing your love for taking the stage, you've released a slew of studio albums, several live releases. The latest record is called Big Dreams and High Hopes. That's got some great tunes on there like Free, Barefoot, and Crazy. That record was produced by fellow Texan Radney Foster, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Was that fun working with him?
Absolutely. You know, I've known him for a couple of years, probably 10 years, I guess, and we started writing songs together, and then we recorded that record together.
Nice.
And, I love being with him. He's one of my great friends, and it's one of those experiences where one of your heroes becomes one of your friends.
Yeah.
It happened fairly seamlessly, which we're lucky.
That's great, man.
That doesn't happen very often.
No kidding. I was going to ask you if you could briefly tell me about one of your tunes called One Thing.
That's a song I wrote a long time ago. I think I wrote it probably about 1999, 2000. Mm-hmm. And it literally is, it got started, I was staying at the Shoney's Motel, which is it's not there anymore, but it was a hotel in Nashville where I used to stay, right off the highway. And it was during the first dramatic rose ceremony, ceremony of the first Bachelor show.
Okay.
Seriously, I was watching it, and for some reason I remember it was raining outside, although that doesn't really matter, but I was sitting there watching it going, wow, this is a trip, man. You know, here I am alone in this motel room, and this clown's on TV with 25 really hot girls. And then it hit me what it meant to me is, like, they were all really hot, none of which I would want to be with. And, you know, so it's like this, it's this odd, for me it was just reality TV was such an odd thing, because that was the first, a lot of people don't remember or think about it, but, like, that was kind of the first reality show that really took us all by storm, like,
right.
Whoa,
mm-hmm.
Became part of the cultural thing. And and it was funny to me that the reality for me watching reality TV is that I would rather have this terrible relationship I have with my own wife than to be with 25 beautiful women that all were clamoring for me.
Right.
Like, that's what reality show meant for me. It was like an eye back on my own reality, and like, hey, this really ain't that bad.
Right.
And so I wrote about it, you know. I just kind of wrote about this one girl who, through all the trials and tribulations and all the BS that we go through, I'll still take it.
Now, Jack, I can assume that you've probably got some new material in the works these days. Is that true? And when can we expect a new album from you?
Well, I've got plenty of songs. I've been writing songs for, you know, Big Dreams and High Hopes actually came out in 2009.
Right.
And since then, I've parted ways with that label and spent a lot of time just getting back to what it is I do and why I do it and how I want to do it for the next part of my career.
Sure.
And so I've been writing a bunch of songs and recording a bunch. And so I'll go in and finish the record hopefully later this fall, during the winter, and have something out in 2014. I'm pretty sure. I'm 98.7% sure I'll have a record out next year.
It's a pretty high percentage.
Yeah, well, in this business, anything can happen, and usually does.
Yeah, sure.
So that 1.3% is actually a lot bigger than we think.
Now, Jack, I was looking through some of the kind of interesting notes in your bio and your information out there, and obviously we're biased around here because we're radio heads, if you will, but you've got a lot of unexpected ties to our business here, radio, as it turns out. Let me ask you, is it true, Jack Ingram, that you set a Guinness World Record back in 2009, or is that some false information out there on the internet?
No, that's true. That's true.
What did you set that record for?
Plaque and everything.
Yeah.
How did that happen? What did you do?
So I did 215 interviews, all being at least 5 minutes long. 215 interviews in a 24-hour period.
Oh, man.
Which was quite a bit.
Yeah, we were sitting here trying to figure out how long each interview had to be in order to fit them all in during a regular day. And that wasn't a regular day, it sounds like.
It wasn't a regular day. No, I started at like 4 in the morning and then ended up, how did that work? Whatever it was. It was
sure.
24 hours. It was a long time.
Yeah. Had you chained in a room, I guess, with a phone in your hand.
They had me sitting with a headphones, you know, headgear set on, and they would just plug the stations in.
Right.
It was actually pretty hard, you know, pretty big undertaking.
Uh-huh. You know? Oh, I can seriously imagine that. I mean, don't make light of that.
I was outside the whole time. They did it. They were doing it. The radio station, I mean, the record company did it as a stunt.
Oh, okay.
To try and get some press about the record.
And they suckered you into being the stunt guy.
Yeah, so it was the day the record came out. It was the day Big Dreams and High Hopes came out. Yeah. So I knew they were going to have me doing a ton of interviews anyway. And so I was talking to this guy, John Zarling, at the label. I said, hey, man, I wonder if there's a Guinness World Record for how many interviews you can do in a day. And he went and found out that there was. And the guy who had it was, I think his name's Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy, right?
Okay.
He had done, you know, kind of the same thing, like a press junket deal where they had done, I think, 99 in a day. And I thought, that's the record, 99? I was like, I've done that before.
Sure.
So I was like, well, I want to get in the book, man. I remember, you know, reading that book as a kid. I wanted to either do like the world record for radio interviews in the day or beat the guy who smoked like 200 cigarettes at one time.
Right. Well, you picked the right one.
Yes.
So I picked the right one. Yeah.
Wow, well, that is a nice award to have on the wall, and I'm sure you would rather not recreate that. And I commend you for doing that, because I understand how painful just doing one of these interviews with us radio types can be. So, no, yeah. I'm just kidding. I definitely appreciate you taking some time with us here on Notably Texan.
Absolutely.
Also, just another interesting radio tie-in, and if I'm not mistaken, I think you're on your way to do some of this afternoon. You lend your voice to several commercial radio stations for their what's called imaging, basically where you kind of announce what the station is, or say, this is the crazy animal, or whatever
right.
It is.
Right. Yeah, I do voice work, imaging or voiceover stuff for close to 30 stations.
Very cool.
Which is pretty cool. It's been pretty amazing because I started doing it for one station. The reason why I did it at all was that when I was living in Dallas, just trying to get anything going in my career, commercially anyway, I would go hang out at The Wolf, 99.5 The Wolf, that station in Dallas. And guy Cody Allen was program director at the time, and he was, you know, I think just trying to like get me off his back. because I'd be up there talking to him about my music, he'd say, I like your voice. We go in and do this, like a Kenny Chesney concert promo deal, where you go in and say, Kenny Chesney's coming to town. He's going to be at the wherever.
Sure.
Get your tickets and all that. And so I did. Well, a couple years later, a guy was in Dallas and heard some of the stuff I did for them. He lived in Austin, McDaniels. And so he said, hey, will you come by the station and do some work for me? I said, sure. And so I did one station, and he said, that sounds great. I'll hire you. Which, you know, for like a couple $100 a month, man, that was a pretty good deal.
Sure.
Especially, you know, I got a day job. So it's like, all right, I'll do that. Well, then somebody else heard it. And so once I had two or three stations, I was talking to my wife. I was like, wow, man. I can do three stations in less than an hour. And 10 years ago, this could have been all the money we needed.
Yeah. Right.
Like, you know, like that would have been it for the month, working 3 hours. This is awesome. And she's like, yeah, but if you had that kind of money and you didn't have to work the rest of the month, you'd probably miss the next time you had to go in and you'd get fired. Like, you know, so I was like, good point. Good point, honey.
That's funny.
And so now I do like 30 of them and, you know, like some big country stations all the way from Nashville and out in the Northwest and South, like all over the country. It's pretty amazing.
And they always tend to have these weird names. So I'm going to make up a moniker for a station, and I just want you to give me an impromptu version. Let's make up a station called The Donkey.
Yeah, 102.5 The Donkey. So the funny part is that I tell the guys going in, I say, look, man, I don't do voices. The voice that I'm going to use is going to be mine.
The Jack Ingram voice, yeah.
My only approach to doing this stuff is that I think country stations pander and beg for audiences.
Sure.
And I don't think they have to. Like, I think it's degrading. Like, man, I'm not going to beg for you to like me.
Right.
And so, like, that's my whole point. So whenever I said, I'm like, hey, this is 102.5 The Donkey. Listen to us. Turn it up. Sing along. If your friends don't like it, put them out of the car. They don't need to be with us.
Okay. Well, that's cool. See, I didn't know if you turned on your James Carville or, you know, did one of these certain types of voices as we hear on a lot of these country stations.
That's, no, that's my point.
That's
like,
cool.
So that's kind of why I'm like this little niche for those people, because a lot of people don't like that attitude. They're like, well, we need to be everything to everybody. I'm like, well, then you don't want me.
Yeah. Right.
Because I live... You know, my career is based on I cannot be everything to everybody. I know that already.
Hey, Jack, that first station you were talking about, that's the one I was going to say we have a little bit of history, because that was it. I was in that promo crew there where Cody was music director way back then. You know, he's moved on now to go to CMT or CMT Radio. He does a national show every week.
The Countdown, he does the TV show.
Yeah.
He's doing really well.
Yeah, Cody's moved on. And I'm here in Commerce, Texas with this radio station, KETR. We're in public radio, man. How much public radio are you doing these days?
Not as much as I'd like. You know, you forget. Oh, I don't forget, but you take it for granted, you know. I was always so busy. I mean, as a, whatever you call it, an emerging artist or
sure.
someone who's, you know, kind of trying to get to another level.
On the rise.
You do so many stations hoping to do more. Mm-hmm. So if you're... KNON, you're dying to be on The Wolf.
Yeah, sure.
You know, but you know that whole idea of enjoying the journey. You know, I hope I can get my kids to really buy into that, because once you get up to the commercial level of radio, it's like it's a different thing, man.
Right.
You don't have time to actually have a conversation where
right.
people talk to each other. I think that's why people love public. You know, public radio. In all forms, has an older audience,
right? One that appreciates conversations.
Yeah, that you can allow the whole thing to breathe,
mm-hmm.
and it's not so much about this, you know, fireworks and pyrotechnics and making people think this is exciting, this is the best we've ever. Blah, 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 blah. It's more like, hey, man, what's going on? Tell me for real.
Yeah,
and you know, you don't have to have. I used to explain to people when I went from going, you know, just visiting Texas country radio stations that played Texas country music to doing the mass commercial stuff. It's like, man, you have to have an appointment. So, and it's all in blocks of 15 minutes at these big stations.
Right.
Whereas when you walk into your station or other public stations across the state or across the country, it's like, y'all can talk about your record collection.
Right.
And an hour later, neither of you want the conversation to end. It's really for music lovers, and it's just a different vibe. You know, it's not necessarily better or worse, and you get great results at both of those situations. It's just, if you're really a music fan and like digging into what this is all about, public radio is the way to go.
Love that. Hey, if you can wrap it up here in just a few seconds, Mac Jack and McConaughey.
Yeah, well, that's a charity foundation that we started last year with Mac Brown from UT football and McConaughey from Naked Bongos, and we pulled together and we put together an event that was, you know, built from us for charities, and so we raised $961,000 last year for five different charities.
Wow.
And we had a ball doing it with music. You know, we had one night with John Mellencamp, like a headliner night, and then the next night we had music with, it was called Jack and Friends Concert. It was me, and I invited Chris Christopherson and Guy Clark and Todd Snyder and Bruce Robinson and Bob Schneider and Hayes Carl and John Randall and Rodney Foster, a bunch of different guys that just my favorite songwriters, and sold out the Austin City Limits Theater and raised a bunch of money, and we're going to do it again this year. And we had a golf tournament, you know, one of those 2 days, and just kind of one of those events where it was very organic and very successful. And
sounds like a
really
blast.
Cool. It was great.
I think we're looking forward to you being in Greenville, Texas this weekend, Jack.
I'm looking forward to it as well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, we really appreciate your time. It's the first time we've gotten to chat with you, and we love getting to talk with Texas performers such as yourself here on Notably Texan, and really looking forward to that big performance at Rally Round Greenville this Saturday night at 10. It is a free show, open to public, and hopefully people are going to get out and get a chance to catch you on a rare Northeast Texas appearance here. So thanks again, Jack. We look forward to new music from you, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Let's do it again soon.